I just hit record.
We're back.
Are we back at the desk?
I think we are.
You are listening to Weird Religion.
Hey, I'm Brian Doak.
And I'm Leah Payne.
This is Weird Religion.
The religion podcast. Wait. Oh.
We don't even remember how we introduced
podcast
our own show.
For people who know religion is weird, but love it anyway.
It's just like forgetting the name of your children.
That makes me so sad. Or I will look at one child and say the other child's name. I mean, I'm sure you do.
People
that,
say too. People say it's like picking a favorite child. I say, is that a hard thing to do? It depends on who's pleasing me at that moment.
Oh no!
I don't know.
This is good for your children's therapy. They're going to bring it in.
Look, friends,
like, here's my dad.
We got to ease back into this.
We do.
We can't ease back into it with perfection.
Nope.
We can't ease back into this. Let's say you haven't gone to church for a while. Let's say you grew up in a religious family.
That's right.
Which you did.
And you go back.
And let's say you hated it at some point in your life, which you did. Mm-hmm. And let's say you left, which you know you did. Mm-hmm. And let's say you came back and you're back in the door and you're like, I don't know how to talk to these people anymore.
You know what's funny? So there's a really funny Mr. Bean clip. Mm-hmm. Do you know about Mr. Bean?
You know, Mr. Bean was playing in a 60s diner in a small coastal town restaurant that I was in just a few days ago.
No
In way. Black and white, and my children were watching it from a table with other children.
Oh, that's so sweet. Well,
there's like all this goofy bodily humor and stuff.
Right. I mean, he's not always my thing, but there's this really funny clip that I've shown to my two children who think it's hilarious where Mr. Yeah. Bean is in church. And he does not know when to stand up. And they're singing, right. Oh, praise him, hallelujah. You know that one, I'm sure.
Sure.
But the joke is he only knows the one.
Just felt like playing that song.
He only knows the hallelujah. And so the whole time he's like not standing at the right time. Yep. He's not singing at the right yep. time, except for when he gets to the hallelujah. And all of a sudden it's really loud. Hallelujah. Yep. So that's kind of what I'm imagining what we're doing right now. So we're getting back in the saddle. We don't know what we're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Someone's like, hello, welcome. And you're like, praise him.
Yep. And with your spirit.
I remember going to some Catholic services mm-hmm. to mass at times mm-hmm. throughout mm-hmm. my childhood and life.
Oh, and yeah, because you grew up in a very Catholic-y part of the country.
Absolutely. Wisconsin, peak Catholicism in the United States. Mm. The kind of like rural stone churches with statues inside.
Beautiful.
That they cry blood.
Love it.
In the evenings.
Yes.
You know, it's one of those kind of places.
Oh, I love that kind of stuff.
And I'm sure that's a real thing. come on, Catholics. You know, this is good, okay? This is good. This is positive. Mm-hmm. And I always thought it was like, the Lord be with you and also with you. But now, suddenly, I was somewhere and now they say, and with your spirit. When did that change?
I have no idea.
How long ago did that change? Probably like a decade ago, too?
I am not a historian of Catholic liturgy, but I do know that that is what you say.
Yes. So you say, and with your spirit.
And with your spirit.
Is it not with you? Are you not your spirit?
I want to say that it really depends on the liturgy. Like, uh-huh. Will you Google? We said we weren't going to open our laptops.
I know.
Brian's opening his laptop.
Okay. Phrase, and with your spirit, has been used in multiple services. In 2000, Pope John Paul decreed that the response, Lord be with you, in the Roman Catholic Mass would change from and also with you to and with
and
your
with
spirit.
Your spirit.
It was made to address theological differences between the original Latin and the English translation that had been used since the 1960s.
NPR says 2008 is they're reporting it. I don't know, as long as I've been going to Catholic Mass, which is not long, but and with your spirit.
So what I was reading, and this is an interesting media story, which is not exactly a religious story, but users, I'm sure you've seen this. And if you haven't, let us be the first to tell you. Google, in Google's newest, like, you know, 2020.
Oh, the AI?
Yeah, Google's thing. They're like based, Google. This is what Google said. This is what Google said. They said, I'm looking for the right sound effect. Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
Google said, hey, in their keynote, they're like, Google, you used to search for stuff. What a bore. They said, quote, let Google do the Googling for you.
I have seen hilarious responses.
So they'll do an AI summary at the top, so you no longer get to decide what to see. So what I was reading was the Google summary at the top.
Yes.
Is it correct? Is it not? Do we even need to know what's correct?
Well, this is super interesting to me because I'm glad that we consulted NPR, which is a...
A real news organization.
It
may or may not be your organization of choice, but it is real.
It says on August 11th, 2008, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops on August 4th released the official text of a new English language translation of the Roman Catholic Mass. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what's your response to the following, the Lord be with you, and then it and also with you is the typical one, but now it's and with your spirit.
I see.
So I
could say either. I could go either way. I feel like, and also with you is a little more folksy, a little more personal.
I don't have strong feelings about it. Yeah, I have.
But let's decide right now which one it should be.
Yeah. I have. Bible scholar. Mm. Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a New Testament passage, but I think you know you're studying.
Never mind.
Then. Bible. You study the Bible. It's all the same, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So here's another change. The old was, Lord, I'm not worthy to receive you, but only say the word and I shall be healed.
Okay.
Versus the new, Lord, I am not worthy that you should enter under my roof, but only say the word and my soul shall be healed. Mm-hmm. Care to comment
on
the distinctions?
Yes. Here? I mean, first of all, the thing about the roof, maybe that's technically the idiom that's used and they wanted to get to a more original translation. That sounds like an issue like that. The other thing about with my soul, with my spirit, with you, is that like, say in Hebrew, which I'm more familiar with, the word nefesh, which sometimes will be translated as soul or spirit,
yes,
which really means breath, or even in a bodily term, your neck or your throat.
Yes.
It's often translated or understood as a dynamic equivalent, as the NIV translation might have it, as meaning like your own self or just you, right?
Oh, okay.
So to say like nafshi in Hebrew, my mm-hmm. spirit might mm-hmm. just mean me.
Okay.
Right? So I can see how saying and with your spirit okay. might be a more like direct kind of rendering. And it might actually introduce the idea that people have a spirit into okay. the discourse.
Okay. I like it.
So then you're vocalizing yeah. that. I mean, I'm just freewheeling here.
Well, it's really interesting because now I just Googled this. And of course, there's a huge like argument amongst Catholics about whether or not roof versus... Lord, I'm not worthy to receive you, which is funny because I knew the mm-hmm. very first time I heard this is what is said right before communion. The very right. first time I heard it, I knew the Bible story that they were referring to, which is the Bible story about the centurion who's asking Jesus
okay.
to heal his servant.
Okay.
And he says, I'm not worthy that you should enter under my roof, but only say the word and my soul shall be healed.
Right.
But I was like, if you didn't know the story, you might be confused, but it's funny because I knew it and I found it to be.
So this is Matthew chapter 8, right?
I think it's Matthew and maybe Luke, but anyway, yes.
Yeah. I'm looking in the Greek New Testament oh, yeah. here. Where's the exact
Do your thing, Bible
verse.
Guy. Looks like Matthew 8:5-8.
The centurion answered, Lord, I'm not worthy to have you come under my roof. That's the NRSV.
Okay.
And then if you go to 8:5 in Greek, which or 8:8, I'm sorry, which I don't know how to read very well. Lord, there it is.
Roof.
Stego, roof.
Okay.
So that's just like a technical word there.
So they went kind of more like...
So maybe they were wanting the words.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I'm surprised.
So listener, have you ever been in Mass and heard and thought of that response as being, and also with you, they changed it actually too. And with your spirit.
Okay. So it's been a long time. You go, like say you haven't been to
I would
Mass
fumble
since
that. I would fumble that.
2008.
I would fumble that.
You would fumble that and with your spirit. I think it's funny when you're in context like, you know, the Mass is pretty accessible in the sense you could just Google Catholic Mass mm-hmm. and get lots of different versions of it mm-hmm. in the sense that you could look it up on your phone and kind of, okay, then we do this. And then there's tons of YouTubers and stuff. But what's funny to me about, because I grew up in a very ritualized tradition, but they never would have used those words for it. And so there's not really a written liturgy, but
sure.
everybody kind of knows what to do.
Sure.
Like, I don't know if that, because you were in charismatic, right? Like there were always the type of people who are going to be dancing up and down the aisle.
Of course.
Or whatever.
There's going to be a message in tongues at this particular right. point. If it's like, silent for long enough.
Sister so-and-so. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a charismatic type place.
But it's like everybody kind of knows if you go there regularly.
Here's the thing. I was raised during a formative period of my life in these kind of hyper charismatic setting. Mm-hmm. And whenever there was a message in tongues, I felt incredibly nervous. Could you imagine if you didn't know what that was or you weren't used to those services and you heard someone just like erupt in that, like how disorienting that could be? Or maybe it wouldn't be nervous at all. You'd just be like, huh, why is someone just shouting right now in that way?
When I was in divinity school, there was, you know, a common assignment. I've given this assignment several times is you have somebody go to a house of worship that is different than what you, you know, so like you might go to a synagogue, you might go to a, so this one woman came up to me, very nice woman who was United Methodist. Mm-hmm. And she came up to me just at, you know, after class sometime and was like, I need to talk to you about something that happened to me. And it turned out that she was going to the super charismatic church. That was the church that was outside her tradition.
Yeah.
And she was like, it was mayhem. And what was funny about it was she was saying, all of a sudden, everyone's singing this song and they start singing about ancient Israel. This woman gets up and then people start doing what I can only describe as the grapevine dance up and down the aisles. And I knew exactly. And I was like, oh, yeah, well, you know, everybody there knew what was going on. Did they usher anyone out? No. Then, you know, like it was just sort of a part of it. But how jarring that was for her when she
In the era of public fear, even though it's still very rare in the era of mass shootings, how would you feel to see someone running the aisles?
Oh, right, right.
In case you don't know, in charismatic Pentecostal circles, running the aisles is the thing
someone
may spontaneously do. And it's like, hey, why is that man running?
Right.
He may appear to be running toward me.
He could also be yelling.
He could be
doing any number of very startling things.
He's reaching for something inside of his jacket. He's running. Oh, he's reaching for a flag. I then saw, you know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I follow a couple of flag makers, charismatic flag makers.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, the technology has really improved since we were kids.
The technology?
Of the flag.
You mean the flag itself, not just the making.
Oh gosh, it's amazing.
How's it improved?
Well, I mean, there's like all of these really, these kind of flags. When I was growing up in these circles, the flags, the material wasn't like super aerodynamic. But now I'm telling you, there are these amazing flag danceable dance, like flags that you can buy. They're color coded according to meaning. Some of them are quite sparkly. I was so impressed. And so, yeah, I follow a couple of flag people.
When did the flag thing start in charismatic Pentecostal churches? Flying flags, waving flags, not even the American flag so much as it might be a colored flag.
I think, you know, the prominence of the American flag has been a later development. Yeah. But yeah,
we're talking about like a purple flag with a lion on it.
Yes. Lion of like the tribe of Judah.
These are the days of Elijah.
These are the days. Yes. So. Okay. I remember like there were two when I was growing up, there was the Lion of the tribe of Judah.
Oh, literally a lion. I was just making that up, but that came to my mind.
That was for fast songs.
By the Spirit.
Slow songs was Glory to the Lamb, and it was like lion a sparkly lamb. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But those were like big, and they were kind of traditional banners. But nowadays, there are these portable flags, and you can like put them in your backpack and kind of whip them out.
It's gotten a little commercialized.
Yeah, you know, I'm
that
sure
that feels a little corporate to me. I don't want to see that.
I think it's like Etsy plus charismatic communities created.
You knew it. You, of course.
This whole industry. Back in our day, you had to make your own flags.
Now, the idea of the jewels, the bling, hasn't our friend of the show, Eric Ramirez, argued in print online somewhere that this is part of the appeal of between Trump voters and charismatics is that the idea of the New York vibe, the gold, the this, the that.
Oh, yeah.
Which aesthetics. is very much, I'm sure you've written about this as well. I just want to give Erica a shout out.
Yeah, Erica.
There's very much a shout out. There's very much a shout out. Shout out to Erica. I just said that. See, I'm not used to speaking like that. I'm not even used to speaking to people.
I'm feeling, much we less started on a microphone. Out really rusty.
There's a crossover between the audiences based on the aesthetic. That's the idea,
that's
right?
100% true. 100%. And the ultra glam, and the kind of, if I may say, gauche, like aesthetics are...
According to you.
According to like the external viewers, like that, like the liberal media elite. Yeah. But I mean...
You're elite. I don't know if you're liberal. I won't even ask, but you are elite. You're an elite.
I know. You're an elite. It's true. It's true. And I do write in the media, but I think that those, there, it's obvious tie-ins, right? Yeah. Like the kind of things that Trump, the ultra gold stuff. I mean, you look at his, what, one of his mini homes, I don't know, where like in the 80s or 90s, somebody came and took a bunch of pictures and it's just gold everything.
Like a gold toilet.
If you look at, yeah, if you look at that, it does not look dissimilar to a televangelist studio.
Well, you want to be around the gold because the streets of heaven will be paved with it. Mm-hmm. That seems kind of depressing. I'd be like, I'd get, if that were a little literal true thing, and if I literally went to heaven, that's two big ifs in a row, I do realize. I would be like, gold streets? Like, can't we do better?
Blood red carpet.
We got to do better.
Wait, gold. What's better than gold streets?
Anything. Anything might be better. I don't know. Something that, like, I don't know, God could think of.
Oh.
You know.
I don't know. I don't know,
like gold bricks. Like that's, I'm just saying that's not my look that I want.
Oh, right. Well, you have a really specific aesthetic.
It's just not like Wizard of Oz.
I aspire to your.
A Wizard of Oz aesthetic?
Visual. You know.
The room we're in right now is not visually appealing yet.
Yet.
But it will be someday.
I feel that if we did like per capita, per academic capita, mm-hmm. I think we move the most. Our offices have been in many different places. This whole podcast began because we were sort of banished to the same closets, like closet.
Now, banished. Aisle. Were we banished?
We were selectively.
Yes, we were banished. Let's reflect on that.
We had two windowless offices that were next door.
I would so love to tell the full story of my banishment, but cannot. It must remain within my heart. But I will say, academics out there, I know you're out there. How many, email us, how many times have you changed offices and how many years have you been at your current institution?
Because I think I'm on like move number 7 or 8.
I'm 7. This is my 7.
Ooh, in lucky 13 number years. 7. Lucky number 7.
I have come to treasure it. It used to feel upending, but I've actually come to enjoy it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's very.
I just don't see this earth as my home. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Okay, I don't see this earth as my home. I don't see, there's no office. You can't, this is why I think in your heart as an academic, in this day and age of change, mm-hmm. you can't start to see any particular structure.
That's right.
As like, I'm like gaslighting myself. You cannot see any particular structure.
That's right.
As permanent or as meaning, you must become the change. You must be the change.
Oh man. Okay, so that, I have to say that one thing that you do really well in your office, and I have just been putting, because I also am office homeless right now. I'm a pilgrim.
You're living in tents,
and
like the heroes of faith of old.
That's right. I put up a little like monument every now and then. I have there. That's why I just left a little pile of rocks outside the door, because I was like, this is where.
Yep. You read of the heroes of faith, Abraham and Leah Payne Isaac and Jacob and. You're in the roll call.
That's right. And so anyway, I have a couple of boxes that need to go into my future office space. And I was just thinking two things that Dr. Brian Doak does so well. Always cool artwork. You always fully move in. Like I have in the past resented my impermanent status. And so then I'm like, I'm not going to move anything.
I'm just going to move.
Right. I feel that was a mistake because my office was never really a homey place to come into. But no matter what, you could be in a closet. You could be in a big fancy house. You could be in this new place that you're right here. It's going to be gorgeous
in a week,
and I want to do that.
So right behind me on the wall that is now blank, imagine a blank wall, listener. I'm going to have bookshelves. I have a poster coming, an exhibition poster from one of my favorite artists, Cy Twombly.
That's so cool.
It says in his scrawly handwriting and with abstract images, leaving Paphos upon the waves of the sea.
Wow.
Paphos, Cyprus, where I just visited a couple of weeks ago. So
what?
It had a lot of meaning to me. Cy Twombly worked in Rome and in Italy for a lot of his life and also visited Cyprus. And I found this on Etsy and I was like,
I'm getting that.
And so that's what's going to go right behind me. But it's not there yet.
That is amazing. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
Cannot wait to see it.
Yeah.
The other thing that you do well is you always have a snack station, like a hospitality suite.
Anybody who's around me at 2 p.m. knows that like a child, I have a snack time.
And that's true.
I just had it before we started recording.
He was like, do you need a snack? And I was like, no.
Speaking of the mass has a snack time.
Oh, it's excellent. It's the snack time of all snack times.
It's built right into the whole
thing.
That's
right.
The Lord be with you and with your spirit.
In fact, you're not supposed to eat until an hour before you go. You're not supposed to eat.
Really?
Yeah.
Never heard of that. Why?
Well, you're going to feast on Christ.
I get it.
Yeah, you're going to break your fast.
I do see. I do see why that might be. It kind of builds up a little bit of longing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It builds up a little bit of longing mm-hmm. within you. You might even just be, I mean, you know, I've taken my kids to churches which have had communion, and they've, sometimes when you might go to a church where like they pass a hearty loaf of bread down the aisle.
That's true. That seems like a cheat.
And then you might rip off like a big piece. And then if you're a kid, you might start to see this as actually a fun opportunity for eating.
Right.
Which, you know, the Catholic wafer, which I do not partake in as a non-Catholic, but I can merely look at, but I've had wafer-like things.
Yes.
It's not an incredibly satisfying, culinary experience.
No.
It's more of a spiritual experience. Why shouldn't it be more culinary, though? Shouldn't it be more satisfying? Wouldn't this be like an early church kind of thing? Like we share a meal, and even if there's a moment where you say something,
see,
it's more like eating things?
This is another thing that I don't know, because I don't really know the history of developing that very almost tasteless wafer thing that they've got going.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's very practical.
My guess is it's maximum accessibility. Like they're probably trying to account for the many different kinds of customs and dietary and allergy needs that people have, if I had to guess.
Now, let me say this.
I don't know, though.
I have attended. It will not call out any churches, but let me tell you about an evolution I had with communion and the form of communion. I once attended worship services in a place where communion was done in a very particular ritual way that felt very special.
Oh,
okay. It was a liturgical tradition, not Catholicism, but where you would come forward and you would even kneel. Mm-hmm. And it could even still be the case that the host could be placed even upon your own tongue by the other person, which is a weirdly intimate act.
It is. Uh-huh.
However, I've also been to churches which use those little two-sided cup things that are pre-sealed. Picture like an hourglass, a miniature hourglass. On one side, there's grape juice.
Oh,
sealed.
Yeah, I have seen
And then on
those.
The other side, there's a cracker sealed. Now, I thought to myself, this is absolutely not good. But then I thought to myself, okay.
That's quite the journey in just a short period of time.
In the post-COVID era, how are you supposed to do this?
Right.
In a way that people feel comfortable with the hygiene of it all. So, you know,
who's to say the Lord is not practical?
Well, this kind of thing.
I love, you know, I like to assign material history projects where my students do the history of material things. Oh. So one of my favorite ones was a student did a history of a coffee cart in a church, how a church decided to get a coffee cart.
Oh, I would like that. I would like to read
that. You
would
have loved it. It was great.
I would very much like that.
Because it was really about the church's ascent class-wise and the type of place in their aspirations.
Yep.
It was great.
Yep. Very casual, kind of inviting. Mm-hmm. A little like, hey, you're not in that church that you're afraid to come into.
Yeah,
I'm doing a callback here.
I'm like a cool mom.
This is becoming an episode. There's a callback.
That's right.
You're coming into the church. You're like, I don't want to come here. I don't know what to do. Oh, wait, there's a coffee
There's
shop.
A latte. You know
I'm
what that is.
I'm going to go stand over there.
Exactly. So it was actually super insightful paper. I haven't forgotten about it. But the other
thing
that made me think about that was I would love a history, a material history of how communion/Eucharist has been observed in the United States. I'm sure someone has done one.
But
wouldn't that be interesting? Because like, how did they develop that? Because all of those little material things have theological changes that are wrapped up in them,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Or at least those potentials there.
Even
if
you're not self-consciously doing it, you sort of, your body does it, you
absolutely.
Are changing certain things. I would love, then you'd have to do a little thing on COVID and how people,
absolutely.
How different traditions coped with that. Because that
absolutely.
Was like so upending.
Yeah, it seems like a recognition that's also appropriate for our technological time. This idea that we cannot merely think of tools as things we use indifferently or without effect,
right.
but rather our tools shape us. Like that's part of human evolution, human
right.
spiritual evolution, that our tools shape us. Or reminds me of a quote we've quoted often on the show where our theoretical training overlaps in the person of Catherine Bell and in the book Ritual Theory. What's
Ritual
the
Ritual Practice.
Ritual Practice, in which she says kneeling produces the subordinated kneeler. In other words, you don't just kneel with no consequence.
Right.
You become subordinated
in you.
As you kneel. Mm-hmm. As you kneel, you're like, this is maybe what I should be doing.
Yes. I think that's, you know, in our tech world where it seems like you can spend an awful lot of your day in a very disembodied state.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important to remember that stuff. Like every little thing about how you are positioning yourself is saying something. There's a reason why we both appreciate
Can I tell you about
work.
Something that I did recently? This is maybe too much disclosure for the pod, but I'm just going for it. This is a new day.
Do it.
Okay. I began having headaches recently. I don't have headaches. I had a really terrible headache, a lot of tension, stress.
Oh gosh, I'm so sorry.
And I was worried that this was going to become a permanent feature in my life. You know, I'm getting to middle age where it's like, if you have one pain, you're like, well, maybe this is the end.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And it was through some string of people whose names I will not mention, but culminating in my wife, Susan, saying, hey, maybe you should try this thing called, now it's almost kind of like, now I'm using my traditional kind of church language here, it almost kind of felt like a new age practice.
What?
It's called craniosacral therapy. It's kind of like a massage, but there's no massage.
Okay.
And it involves, well, I'll put a link in the show notes to craniosacral. And okay, you can see maybe that it's not considered like scientific or it's not whatever, but it involves someone feeling the currents and blood and stuff as it flows through your head, and you express anything that might be coming up and any thoughts you might have about parts of your body. Mm-hmm. And as I was there, so it's like kind of like a way of like kind of like doing like therapy, but not with a therapist, but somehow involving your body. But like, you know, they're there for you and they're holding space for you. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of like, and as I was doing this, I was thinking, hey, this isn't something I do.
Right.
But, and this is why I'm telling you this. One of the thoughts that came to my mind as I reflected on my body in response to these prompts and these vibes or energies was that I just spend a lot of time crunched over a computer. Oh, almost, gosh. Almost one might say bowing.
Whoa.
To it. Almost one might
That's
say
deep. That's deep.
In a state of penitence before the screen.
Oh, wow.
I'm penitent before my screen. I'm holding my phone in front of me, basically petting my phone.
Oh gosh. One could say. Yeah, you could really go.
I mean, think about that.
Right.
As a kind, I'm sure someone's made this observation before, but like I thought of that and I thought, how much time do I spend bowing like into my screen? It's a lot. That's also because I'm tall and tables aren't made for me. So I'm always bowing anyway.
That's true. You actually
People
have
are like,
to do
you're too tall,
quite
sir.
A lot.
You bow down. And I say, no, I will not bow down.
There's something I've noticed that tall people have different strategies for managing their tallness. Yeah. I've noticed. You sort of embrace it. You're just like, I'm tall. That's who I'm going
to
be.
I will slouch though to come down. Cause like, I don't want people to be looking up to me. I'm not that tall. I'm not like 6'8" or something.
Well, but you're quite a lot taller than me. So anytime it's like, we mostly talk while we're sitting down, but that's, I feel for you because there is a little, you're on the taller, much taller end than average.
You know, I'll tell you some things. It's really hard to be tall. It's hard to be a male.
Everybody
It's
hurts.
Hard to be. Don't continue that discourse, Brian. Do not continue. Back away from the difficulties.
Poor of my Brian. Life. Okay, anyway, where were we? We were talking about.
It doesn't matter.
Your woo-woo experiences.
So I had this woo-woo experience and, you know, it was, I felt it was good for me. When I had the kind of pre-consulting talk with the specialist, I said, you know, when they're like, hey, why are you doing this? And I'm mm-hmm. like, you know, I just want to say that this isn't the kind of thing that I do.
Aw.
But that's precisely why I'm doing it. Because, you know, when the fear of death comes in and you mm-hmm. think, your headache will not become permanent and is now a tumor behind your eyeball. You know, I was like, the mind wanders, the mind reels with possibilities.
Wow.
Does it not? And that is when I feel like a pilgrim merely passing through.
Wow. I think, are you going to go back?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go back.
That's great.
I'll go back a few times. I feel like I owe it to that experience, whatever it was.
We've had a pretty good experience. I want to say that this episode should probably be like a bonus episode where we talk about how we warmed up.
Possibly. Although given the scarcity of content from us over the past year, I wonder if we can afford to waste even this. And I believe there have been some jewels here.
Thank you. Thank you for coming back.
Yeah.
Back to
the table.
Back in black. We're back in action, everybody.
Yeah. Welcome. Good to see you. We've actually seen you many times.
This has been a production of Weird Religion. A podcast for people who know religion is weird but love it anyway. Follow us on Twitter or Instagram. Follow us into the ocean. Allow your heart to blossom. Retreat into the gorgeous and haunted forests of your mind. Find us there.